Well, everybody, welcome to episode 220 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist, Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, we're going to talk some girls soccer later on, but right now my first guest is the former head coach of the Ankeny boys and girls swimming teams. His resignation became official last week, and I thought we should get him on the podcast one last time to talk about his decision and to reminisce about some of the highlights in his career. He is Justin Crouch. Justin, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet. Well, I had Drew McAnally on the podcast last week to talk about his resignation as the Ankeny girls basketball coach. And Drew told me that his departure was all family related. He has two young kids that he wants to be able to watch, you know, play their sports. And I know you have some young kids as well. So was your family a big reason for your resignation?
Yes, it was. I have a daughter who has some unique needs and some unique challenges. And right now it's just the schedule I run during the winter, especially in the winter seasons these past few years and this fall as well, running the girls program, made it a very extremely challenging and rewarding for sure, because we performed way above my expectations, but home life was getting more and more of a challenge. I decided, early on in the boy season that things weren't going well for me personally. So I did take a leave of absence during the boy season. And luckily, thanks to assistant coach Steve Jones leading the way while I was gone, the boys didn't miss a beat, continued to work the path and believe in the process that I set out. But at the end of the day, the challenges of being a coach and a father and a husband and a teacher is very challenging.
Oh, for sure. Well, you had been the Ankeny boys swimming coach since 2009. You also became the girls head coach last fall following the retirement of Michelle Stout. I know you told me that there was a 1 week overlap to the two seasons that was really difficult because you were trying to prepare your girls for the state meet in November while also trying to get the boys squad ready to go for their season. And I don't know if the high school athletic associations are going to, you know, reconsider those schedules anytime soon, but you know, was that a factor in your decision? I can't imagine you're looking forward to that again next November, were you?
No, the overlap isn't fun. It's fun to, I wish the association would take into account the number of coaches that coach both boys and girls swimming. A lot of times in sports, you're a one coach sport, but in swimming, due to the lack of number of coaches, it makes it extremely difficult to have a boys coach and a girls coach and then be able to, switch places, kind of like Michelle and I had for a long time. But being both was very difficult. It got things off on it just is a unique situation. I mean, you don't ask the boys and girls basketball coach to coach both sports at the same time. I don't understand why the association does that with swimming. It's really unfortunate.
Like you mentioned, your boys team ended up having a really good season. Your squad placed fourth in the state meet, and that was your seventh top 10 finish in a row, your ninth top 10 finish overall in 14 seasons. Lance Swanepoel was named the swim athlete of the year after defending his state title in the 100 butterfly and winning another crown in the 50 freestyle. So you have to feel really good about, you know, how you closed out your final season.
Absolutely. It was, I kind of knew going into the state meet, this was going to be my last one. I hadn't made that apparent to many people. Mostly my wife was the only one that knew for the most part. But to finish fourth and swim the way we did, way above expectations, was a testament to the boys and the hard work they put in, a testament to the coaching staff for the hard work we put in. And, you know, seeing my dad receive the Iowa High School Athletic Association Hall of Fame Award before the meet just kind of put me at ease and put me in a place of where I've done everything I could do at Ankeny. I'm leaving Ankeny in a really good spot. And I think the next coach that comes in is going to be able to take what I've kind of laid a foundation for and take it running and in whatever direction they see fit and be able to increase the accolades that have been set forth.
Well, I know you told me earlier that you know you credit your dad for a lot of the success that you've had, and obviously, if you kind of knew that this decision was coming, you know, I can understand why that was really emotional for you. You told me that you know the meet basically left you in tears and speechless. So yeah, that had to be kind of a tough day for you.
It wasn't tough. It wasn't tough. It was far from tough. It was a sense of relief knowing that what I've done everything I could possibly do, and that. If I were to, you know, they say, and I'm not, this is kind of extreme, but if they were to say I was going to die that day, I would have died a happy man. Just knowing I've laid everything out there. I've done everything I could possibly do. And, you know, that includes winning a state championship, having state champions, having state swimmers of the meet, having kids move on to be successful. People that work at Google or in the graduate from service academies. I've had so many great kids go through my swim program that I feel like I've been the one that's been blessed to be a part of it.
Well, I know you told me earlier that this was the most challenging season that you've personally ever had. You took that brief leave of absence from the team in December, which you said had very little to do with the team. You said it had more to do with needing to get in the right frame of mind. But obviously things did go well for, you know, the team down the stretch. But even though you guys did have success in the pool, you know, it does seem like the season maybe took a toll on you, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to be the first one to admit that towards the start of winter break at our last dual meet versus Valley, things did not go well for me personally. I probably could have handled some things better than I did, but you couldn't go back. You could only go forward. And for me to be the coach that I wanted to be the rest of the year, I needed that time to get away and figure things out, get my head on straight, because I wasn't going to lead these boys very well in the frame of mind that I was that day.
Well, you're certainly leaving the boys program in really good shape. You guys won the lone state title in school history in 2019 when the coaching staff was honored as the state coaches of the year. You followed that up with back-to-back second place finishes in 2020 and 21. You know, you've been blessed with some really outstanding swimmers over the last several years. Trent Franson was the star of the 19 and 20 squads, and then Lance kind of took over, you know, the mantle as team leader after Trent's graduation. I'm sure you'd be the first person to admit, though, that you can't have coaching success without talent, because you've been pretty fortunate in that area, haven't you?
Absolutely. You know, it's not for the longest time you look at things and you map things out, and it's not just the talent I've had previously with the last couple years, but it was really neat. And the cool thing that that this town of Ankeny has brought to the swim community, I guess you would say, would be that it seemed like every year the kids just kept getting a little bit better and a little bit better and a little more passionate and a little more knowledgeable and a little more into the sport. So that was really neat to see, you know, the swim community grow in that way. When I first got here, I was young, you know, 14 years ago, like you said. I was probably a little over my head at the beginning, and to admit, I was probably not a very good coach at the beginning. But once I got into it and kind of learned my role and felt my way through, like I said, I kept getting kids that were getting a little bit better when they'd come in, and a little bit better and a little bit better. And then boom, it just kind of took off. So, like I said, the kids and the families in this community are amazing. The parent support, the school support for the most part has been very, very positive, very, swim oriented. And, you know, I've just been very blessed to be a part of it.
When you look back at your career, you know, what are the memories that you'll think of first? Will it be the state championship season, or will it be something more simple, like maybe, you know, something funny that happened at practice one time?
I honestly, being done, looking back already, I'm going to miss the day-to-day grind. I'm going to miss the day-to-day relationships with the kids. I've always built my program on making sure everyone felt included, the best swimmer, the worst swimmer, the new swimmer, the old swimmer, whoever. I tried to make everyone feel like they were a part of my family. And, you know, you build some really, really strong bonds with people that keep coming back year after year. And it's going to be really a change of pace to not have that day-to-day interaction with my athletes. As for the state championship season, unreal. Totally felt like we were a year away from winning a state championship, but I'm glad we got it when we did, because it ended up the year after wasn't quite in the cards for us.
Right.
The surprise that day will definitely be one of the top highlights I have. Another top highlight, just even going back to my time in Ottumwa, being at the first state meet and those kids in Ottumwa, a small team, small town team, getting 10th place at the state meet, being a top 10 in my first year coaching, that's probably the craziest thing I could have ever thought of. One of my former assistant coaches, Dustin Rhodes, was on that team, mm-hmm. In the past, and just to go from where I started back there, where I was like in over my head for sure, getting my feet wet and trying to be a 20-year-old, a 20-something, trying to figure out life out after college, and growing into the person I am now, I can honestly say that, to answer your question, the day-to-day relationships are the things that are going to be hardest.
So you mentioned Ottumwa. So have they ever had a top 10 team before?
Yeah, they. In fact, my background, I swam for my dad, obviously, and he was a very successful coach. Coached under him for a couple years as an assistant. Went down to Ottumwa at the begging of an old coach that has now passed away named Mike McWilliams. And Mike McWilliams was a tough son of a gun. He was an old school guy. Loved every minute of coaching with him because he was so knowledgeable and so passionate about the sport. In terms of when I was down there, it was just amazing at the passion he had in the sport. And he actually, in the 90s, when I swam, had some pretty darn good teams. Yeah, they did have some top 10 finishes. So.
All right. Well, yeah, you seem to be one of those coaches who got just as much enjoyment, you know, from the last kid on the team, you know, getting a new PR in some event, you know, as you did from a guy like Lance or Trent winning another race. You know, you'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. You know, there's kids all throughout the years. You know, like I said, they're just seeing the accomplishments that these kids come up with going forward. Like I said, I've had kids that have swam for me that have gone to the service academies and graduated with honors. I've had kids work for Google. Former swimmer of mine works for Google. I have family swimmers that are now family men that have kids. And I see them at the pool working with their young little kids swimming. So it's really neat to see. And, you know, there's all sorts of success stories out there. And I'm happy to be able to call my little part a small role in it.
When you mentioned the relationships with the kids, I mean, especially during the time of the season when you have the two-a-day practices, you spend so much time with the kids. I mean, it's almost like you're one big family, isn't it?
Absolutely. You have to be. You either have to love the sport or love the people you're around. I fall in the category of loving both. I've been around the pool. I was a pool rat for a long time as a kid. And that just kind of urged me into a career, 'cause that's where I felt most comfortable. Going forward, I'm hopeful that I can get in and do some coaching with my kids, at the club level. But, just because I'm not going to be the head coach doesn't mean I'm going to be super far away from the sport for sure.
Well, I should also mention that you guided the girls' team to a tie for 7th place in last fall's state meet, and that was the 9th straight top 10 finish for the Hawkettes, so that program is certainly going, you know, strong as well. And I know you told me when you took over the girls' program that it wouldn't be that big of an adjustment for you, since you had already been an assistant in the program for a long time, you know, and you had to feel good about what the girls accomplished last season.
Oh, absolutely. The girls worked extremely hard. If you had told me we could finish 7th at the state meet, with the girls that came back, I thought that was going to be a stretch going in. And after we swam on Friday, I would have said that's a stretch. But the girls really showed up on Saturday and swam lights out on Saturday. The relays really moved up. And anytime you can get boys or girls on the podium, that's just a great accomplishment for the team. Not just the girls that are in that position, but the whole team in general, because it takes a team to work together to get to the goals that you want to achieve. And, you know, having such a small team this year for the girls, I thought, you know, we swam way above expectations also, and they took a backseat to nobody.
So moving forward, you know, do you have any idea who might replace it? Do you think any of the assistants will be interested in the job?
Yeah, I think there's some candidates out there that could be really good. I don't know if they're interested, but I if anybody's interested and has swimming experience, the ADs, I'm sure, would talk to a lot of people. The hard part is just swim coaches don't grow on trees, you know? And you got to find the right person that loves it and loves the relationships with kids. And a lot of times the grueling schedule and families, you know, it just makes it a really... The one thing I can commend my dad on was he missed a lot of our childhood growing up, but he was always very actively involved when he could be. And I, when I decided to walk away, it was more of a need rather than a want. I didn't want to necessarily walk away, but I needed to.
Sure. So do you think it's likely that the school would hire one person for both jobs then? I mean, you talked about how common it is that a coach will do both programs.
Absolutely. I think they would hire the best candidate possible. If that person wants to do boys and girls, I would think they would hire it. I don't think it's that 1 week of overlap is not fun. I wanted to focus on the girls 100%, and I felt divided that week.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find the right person that loves the sport, loves to interact with kids, I think it's manageable. It's not enjoyable that 1 week overlap, but it's manageable. And by the time that Saturday night state meet rolls around, you're ready for a nap.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, you mentioned that you might do some coaching with your kids, be involved in the club. Do you think you'll ever get back into high school coaching again, or do you think maybe you're done with that?
I'd never say never. I do love the high school aspect of swimming. I like the team component. USA Swimming is a great, great organization, and there's a lot of worthy clubs out there that do a lot of amazing things. I couldn't do or have the success of what I do without the help and the kids wanting to go and do more outside of our season, because our season is just so short. So I realize the need for USA Swimming, and I realize a lot of kids love that aspect about it. But I do feel like there can be a missed component of that teamwork, camaraderie. At a dual meet, it's so much different when you're on the line and you need to win this race to win a meet or something like that. And sometimes, you know, you win some, you lose some. But I like that. It gets my competitive juices flowing a little bit more high school swimming than USA Swimming in terms of like that team point component. Not that USA doesn't have that, but it's a little different when you have so many different age categories and
sure.
different sessions. And to answer your question, I could see myself getting back into high school coaching at some point if my family would ever consider letting me.
Letting you, yeah, there you go. Well, Justin, it's been a pleasure to work with you over the years. You've always been very generous with your time, and I appreciate that. And I want to wish you the best of luck in the future. I'll probably run into you again somewhere. But before I let you go, I did want to get your thoughts on one of the hot-button political issues of the day. You know, as someone who has coached both boys and girls, I thought you might be able to offer a unique perspective on the issue of transgender girls competing in sports. I'm sure you're familiar with the story of Leah Thomas, who became the first openly transgender athlete to win an NCAA Division I national championship in any sport after she won the women's 500-yard freestyle event at last year's NCAA Swimming Championships. Now, full disclosure, I have a son who is transgender, and if anybody listened to the podcast that we did on this issue a while back, you know, you'll know that I'm fully supportive of the LGBTQ community, and I do believe that everybody deserves to have the right to compete, but I also understand the other side of the issue where, you know, some people feel like a transgender woman does enjoy a competitive advantage that isn't fair to the other athletes. You know, I can see that. So that's a long way of teeing up the question for you, Justin, but what do you think of the whole issue? Do you think there's a fair way to do some sort of compromise, you know, that would be fair to everyone?
You know, I am one of the most liberal people you're probably going to meet. I am, my swimmers, although they shouldn't know this, they know I'm a Democrat and a liberal. As for the Leah Thomas issue, you know, it's so hard. You know, she played by the rules, you know. She did the hormone therapy. She did the time away and did the full transition, you know. And I feel like if they can't compete, where can they compete? You know, I want to be an inclusive environment. I want to be at a pool where everybody feels equally actively a part of a team. And, you know, at the end of the day, medals are just medals. They don't take away the performance. They don't take away, the feeling of looking at the board and seeing you do your personal fastest time. You know, I really have an issue with people that are, you know, and I don't want to get too political, but why is our state government worried about where people are going to the bathroom? Why are we more concerned about books being banned in school than what's being actually taught in the curriculum? You know, there's a lot of questions out there that of like, don't we have better things we could be doing? One. But to get back to your Leah Thomas question, I feel like if they don't have anywhere to participate, a transgendered person, then what are we doing? Like, can we find some common ground where we can get them the recognition they deserve? Because Leah Thomas put in just as much work as any other girl out there that was participating all season long.
Sure.
And she did it with a lot of people spitting in her face.
Yeah.
And that's not okay with me. Being an inclusive person, being a liberal. And I joke with my friends a lot, not about LGBTQ, but I joke about the other sides of the issue a lot. And they know I'm a person that loves people, loves relationships, loves. And so at the end of the day, is getting first or second at the NCAA national championship meet a big deal in the grand scheme of things? Can't we just let everybody participate and be who they feel they were called to be?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, life is so hard for those kids already.
Absolutely.
And then if you tell them, hey, you can't compete because, you know, you're different, and it's not fair to the other people. I mean, what's that going to do? I mean, their self-esteem is already.
Absolutely. They have more. And the reason why I brought up the bathroom issue is because it just affects such a small number of people. You know, transgenderism, it's not like one in every four people is transgendered. We're talking about fractions of a percentage
right.
of people. So if they want to have their moment as an athlete, why take that away from them?
Yeah. Yeah, one other thing I'll mention and then I'll let you go is when I've heard some people make the argument that, oh, the transgender girl might steal a scholarship away from my daughter.
And that's no.
It's like if your daughter is good enough to get a scholarship, you know, there's how many schools out there, she'll get a scholarship. Just if having one transgender athlete maybe getting a scholarship somewhere, and I don't even know if there are any that have. I mean, yeah, that's just such a sad argument.
And we're talking scholarship. If you look at the NCAA scholarship allotment, swim teams get a fraction of scholarships that football, that basketball get, you know, that they're cutting their scholarships into quarters, halves, eighths, you know, to fill out rosters. So you can't tell me if your girls or boy isn't good enough to participate, there's not a quarter of an eighth of a scholarship somewhere that somebody could give a kid.
Right, right.
So, I don't know. There's bigger world problems out there than swimming. So
yeah, for sure. Well, maybe someday we'll do another podcast and we'll dive into this a little bit more. I'm sure we'd enjoy that conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, Justin. Well, thanks a lot for coming in. I appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good day.
Yep. All right. Well, my next guest is the head coach of the top-ranked Ankeny Centennial girls soccer team. Last year, he guided the Jaguars to the third state title in the last six seasons, and his team is off to a 4-1 start in 2023. He is Chris Allen. Chris, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us.
Hey, you bet. Well, your team got off to a dominant 4-0 start this season, posting four straight shutouts and not even allowing a shot on goal in your first three games. You know, I was starting to wonder if your team could go undefeated for a long stretch and perhaps even keep a clean sheet going for quite a while. But obviously, both of those streaks came to an end last night with a 3-2 loss to number 7 Dowling Catholic in a shootout. I'm sure you have a lot of takeaways from that game, but you know, one of them is that, boy, this new conference you're in is just going to be a dogfight night in and night out, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if that was a takeaway from the game, but that's something we knew coming into the season. Plus, you know, with coming off a state championship year, you're going to obviously have a target on your back. So we knew everything was going to be a battle for us this year.
Well, I thought Dowling kind of controlled the possession in the final 20 minutes of the first half, and the Maroons eventually broke through with a goal by Ella Anlicker in the 31st minute. She later scored again early in the second half, and both of her shots were just rockets that your goalkeeper, Kate Bergen, you know, she really couldn't do much about, could she?
Right. You know, Kate's quality and Ella as well, and, you know, Ella's quality just helped her find the goal in those two situations.
Well, to your team's credit, you guys fought back. You got a goal from Avery Porter in the 58th minute, and then Alana Pennington scored the equalizer in the 71st minute on another great shot. You know, you had to be really happy with the way your team responded to being down 2-0, because obviously, you know, you guys aren't in that situation very often.
No, and we talked about facing adversity and how it could be good for us at halftime. Actually turned the locker room over to the kids, you know, with about 4 minutes left in the halftime, and allowed them to kind of process the game after laying out some challenges for the team. And, you know, we come out there and Ella gets that second goal, and it's like, oh, maybe we're not going to respond. But they never let down their fight and found a way back into the game. And we actually probably had a couple opportunities to close out the game. We've got to clean up some finishing on corner kicks and things like that. But other than that, I couldn't be prouder of the kids for fighting back, even going down that second goal, because we thought we were chasing one goal, and then all of a sudden we're chasing two to stay in the game. And we're able to, I thought, you know, especially in the overtime, probably had the majority of the possession. You know, after, like you said, in the last 20 minutes of the first half, giving up the ball quite a bit, playing more of a transitional game than we'd like to.
Well, after the two scoreless overtime periods, the game went to a shootout, and Dowling eventually prevailed by a 4-3 margin, and that snapped your team's 10-game winning streak dating back to last season. And I don't know if anybody ever likes having a game, you know, that ends with a shootout, but it's probably a good thing to experience one early on, because, you know, you never know when you might have to do it again later in the season, right?
Yeah, you know, in the end, it's probably a good experience. I wish there was a different way to experience it. You know, 8 years ago, if you asked me, I would have been vehemently against games ending in ties. But I think, you know, with the way the rankings come out, a tie at 2-2 says a little bit different than if somebody looks at the scoreline and says 3-2 Dowling and they don't understand the story of the game.
Right.
And so I think, you know, especially in our league, there's just going to be a lot of ties. You know, Monday night, Johnston Ankeny was essentially a tie that went to a shootout as well. And that can just happen almost any given night in this league. And, you know, I didn't get home until 11:30. I don't know how late our kids got home. But when you go into double overtime and into shootouts, it's a physical and emotional toll. And, you know, it's hard to turn around and be a student athlete the next day. I had a hard enough time turning around and doing my work. So I just feel a little bit for the kids in that situation.
Well, I know I was up working until about 3 o'clock, so I'd be in favor of getting rid of the overtimes and the shootouts as well. So
yeah, maybe we could set up, you know, play some tournaments early in the season where if you're in a tie, you settle it with a shootout or something like that. But I think it's something for the union to consider, whether or not we need to continue with the ties or with the shootouts to resolve games, or we can just allow them to end in ties and maybe play a true 45-minute half on each side of the half, and that be it.
Sure. Well, most teams probably don't have a player like Anlicker who can do some of the things that she does, but did you guys learn some things last night about your team and the loss that, you know, that could be helpful down the road?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things we learned about our team in terms of mentality. We found a way to claw back. I think there's some things that we'll have to challenge ourselves in terms of movement. How does a player like Anlicker get open? One of them was a transition. You know, we were unpressured and she ended up with the ball. And so you don't really set up to defend that situation. But the second time, you know, they clearly built into that attack and she found the ball. And so, you know, a player like that would remind me of like a player like Shimmer last year, who we would probably have to mark out of the game. We chose not to. Mm-hmm. We chose to be aware of her. And so maybe that's something on me to consider as we look at, you know, potentially future matchups with Dowling.
Well, now that you're 5 games into the season, you know, have you liked what you've seen from your team thus far? Because even with the loss last night, your team has scored 24 goals this season while conceding just 2 during regular time. So you guys obviously have been pretty dominant.
Yeah, I really like what we've seen. I like what we've seen about the capability of the team. I think it's now putting everything together. You know, Carlisle, we saw how well we can move the ball around. Ames dealing with the conditions of the wind and still maintaining a shutout. I think we generated 17 corner kicks in that game. That's probably more than I've seen any other time from any other program, you know. And then Council Bluffs, we knew that they were going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, and we wanted to make sure to take them out of the game early. You'll talk to Alana later, but, you know, she started that game off with two goals in the first 2 minutes to really set a tone, and that was pervasive throughout the entire game. We moved the ball extremely well. I think we connected over 70% of our passes in that game, had close to 70% of possession in that game. And that's not something you typically do against a top 8 team.
Sure.
You know, and they were at the time. And then in the last two games, the conference games, you know, I think Urbandale caught us off guard a little bit, but we were able to, you know, still had a shutout 2-0 win in a game that we probably gave up more shots on goal than we would have liked to have seen. And then, of course, with Dowling, them coming out early and getting the goal in the first half and having a bit of that possession in that last 20 minutes, that's not something we like to see as well. But if we take the earlier games where we protect the ball like we did and apply it to that Dowling game, I think we can get a different result.
Well, one of the positives about your attack has been that you've had several different players involved. Katie Compton leads the team with 6 goals. Alana has 5, and then McKenna Hilton and Ava Martin each has 3. You know, it seems like a lot of teams are built around one dominant scorer, like Shimmer was last year for Lincoln. But, you know, that certainly isn't the case with your team, is it?
Yeah, I don't think that's really been the identity of our team for a bit. You know, we've been able to spread the ball out and share it and have people create chances. Different girls getting up towards 10 assists, which is a pretty high number for us. And then, of course, like you said, different girls scoring goals. And I think those same girls that you've mentioned were either at 10 or above goals last season, with the exception of maybe one of them.
Well, Avery Porter is certainly one of your senior leaders, and she did go down with an injury last night with about 6 minutes left in regulation, and it did not return. You know, do you have an update on her condition? Is she going to be okay?
She got checked out this morning. They're definitely looking at a knee. She doesn't have any results back and probably won't have any back until Friday. So we're positive vibes, prayers, you know, whatever your thing is, just sending them her way. She's keeping a really positive mindset. She was out at practice tonight, like just kind of invested, sitting with her leg up, but just watched every minute of practice. When we transitioned to the weight room to do a little work in the weight room, she was there with us as well. And so she's got a positive mindset about it, and no matter what the results are, I'm sure she's going to find a way to contribute.
Well, your team will be back on the pitch Friday for another big game. Number 4 Valley will visit Centennial in a matchup of the last 2 state champions. Of course, you guys ended the Tigers' 37-game winning streak in last year's semifinals, so they were already going to be motivated. But I see they also lost to Waukee Northwest 3-0 last night, so they obviously will be looking to, you know, to right their ship. I know Northwest is good, and they're ranked number 3, but were you surprised by that result?
I watched Northwest at our Centennial invite, and I thought they're physically, they're aggressive, they're a tall team. They really put Linmar and Pleasant Valley under for much of the 2 games that I was able to see at our home turf. They looked very dangerous in the attack. They like to have fun on the ball, you know, so they're going to take people on. So in that way, I thought they could be very dangerous. The 3-0 kind of caught me off guard because I don't know that I've ever seen a Valley team get beat by 3 goals. So I went back to watch at least the goals to see how those were scored. 2 of them came off of either a free kick or a set piece, and then one was in the run of play, kind of in a transitional moment. So I think the game, especially what I've seen in the first half of the game, was a little bit closer than what maybe the scoreline would speak to.
Well, what's going to be the key for you guys, you know, to beat Valley again? You just have to play your game?
Yeah, I think I'd like to say we'd have to play our game, but I think you have to also adapt to them a little bit. Like, so when we played them last year, we made some in-game adaptations. And we're going to have to do the same too. We're going to have to be a little bit flexible with Valley. So we have a way we want to play, but then we can't just be stuck and rigid in that because they like to drive forward very quickly, create a lot of loose ball chances, 50-50 balls, and we don't like to necessarily be in that game. And so it's going to take some composure to clean that up, but at times we might just have to relieve pressure in ways that we don't, you know, tend to relieve pressure, whether that's putting the ball out of bounds so that we can regroup. So we just got to be ready to adjust.
Now, later this month, you guys will play in the Tournament of Champions at Bettendorf again, and that's always been a very prestigious tournament. Do you know the matchups for that event yet, or will they be announced in the next couple of weeks?
Actually, I do have a schedule, but I can't tell you who we play. It's all out of state. I do know that Ankeny is on the other side of our bracket, but both Simon and I have been assured that if it works out that we would end up in a championship game, they're going to find some other way to have us play rather than to have us play each other and then turn around that next Friday and have a matchup against Ankeny as well. So.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure you feel like your team's difficult schedule will help prepare you for the postseason, you know, and it sure looks like the top teams in Class 3A are from the CIML this year because the highest-ranked teams from Eastern Iowa, you mentioned Linmar and Pleasant Valley, you know, they were both swept by Valley and Northwest at the Crosstown Invite earlier this month. Do you think some of those Eastern Iowa teams, you know, could still be dangerous later on, though?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think everybody's going to be a little bit different later on. You know, I would expect us to be as well. There's a lot of things that if I looked at our team, I'd say we're playing young. You know, whether it's awareness or composure under a little bit of pressure. And I don't imagine that will be that same team come end of May. And so I would say the same for those teams. You know, Linmar, they were very appreciative of being in our tournament, even though they go home with 2 losses, but they know that those losses would help them grow as a team. The same was true for Pleasant Valley. So I definitely think they'll be different and you don't know what to expect at that point.
Well, it should be a fun season. We've already had some great games. I'm sure we'll have plenty more. I'm looking forward to it. So thanks for coming tonight, Chris, and good luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, the weather hasn't hurt either.
No, for sure.
I don't want to jinx it. But
well, yeah. Good job with that. So.
Thank you.
All right, well, my final guest tonight is a senior midfielder for the Jaguars. She scored a team-high 14 goals and also had 5 assists as a junior when she earned first-team All-State honors and was named to the all-tournament team after helping the Jaguars to the Class 3A title. She already has 5 goals and 2 assists this season, which ties her for the team lead in points with 12. And next year, she'll be taking her talents to Western Illinois. She is Alana Pennington. Alana, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Well, it was quite a game last night. I know Coach told me afterwards that he thought your team was just exhausted at the end. You know, were you pretty tired afterwards?
Yeah, I was very tired. I mean, after 2 overtimes and PK shootouts, it's a lot on our bodies.
Well, last year you guys had to play a number of games in cold and windy weather. You know, it was really a miserable spring, and now we're having this unseasonably warm weather, you know, which most people are really happy about. But the warmer temperatures, you know, that probably became a factor maybe a little bit towards the end of the game, huh?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, definitely, like, especially during the end of the season, we have to adjust to the warm weather because at the start of our season, it's super cold, and then we get to this super hot weather all of a sudden. So I think, like, these warmer days right now, we're trying to take advantage of and get used to the warm weather.
Well, that was only the 7th game that you've lost in your high school career. You guys obviously aren't used to losing. So is it kind of hard to process afterwards, or do you just kind of have to forget about it and move on?
I mean, it's for sure hard, but as long as we are leaving it on the field, I honestly take that, and we all adjust to it. And obviously, it's super hard to lose for us, but at the same time, every loss is something. We're gaining something from it, and we're growing more each time.
Well, we talked with the coach about how your team got down by a 2-0 margin. I don't know if you guys have ever had a two-goal deficit in your high school career, but what was going through your mind? Did you think you guys, you know, could come back?
I mean, obviously I was a little nervous because I don't think we were playing to our potential, but I mean, we really came together after that 2nd goal and we just talked together as a team out on the field. And I think after that talk, we realized that we just need to start playing more together and having more fun because I think we were all getting too serious and getting mad at each other. And so once we started to do that and have more fun, then, you know, we got the results.
Well, Avery got the comeback started with her goal, and then you got the equalizer about 13 minutes later with an absolute rocket from about 30 yards out. Now, you didn't have a lot of time to get that shot off. You know, were you able to, line it up a little bit, or did you just have to kind of fire away?
I mean, honestly, once I turned, I saw a little gap opening, and usually when I have those, I just take a shot, and Alan always tells me in practice to rip those if I see an opportunity because he knows I have the distance for it, so... Yeah, I just honestly saw the opening, and I took a shot, and I knew that they had their starting goalkeeper in, so I was, you know, just took an opportunity.
Well, do you think that's one of the best goals that you've ever had? You know, have you ever had one from farther away?
Yeah, so last year, who were we playing? You don't remember? Okay, well, we were playing some team. We ended up winning, like, 10-0, but I had a goal from 40 yards out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What'd you say?
Marshalltown?
Marshalltown, yeah.
Well, your team certainly had the momentum at that point. I thought Dowling was maybe getting a little gassed. Did you feel like going into overtime that you guys, you know, had the edge and that maybe you could get another goal and not have to go to PKs?
Yeah, I definitely do. We had more opportunities than them, definitely, in the overtime. But, you know, once you're tired and your legs start cramping up, it's honestly just, okay, let's see if we can get one opportunity. If not, let's hold out to PKs because we know we're strong during that time.
Well, yeah, once the game went to a shootout, I imagine you guys were confident because you succeeded in those situations a few times last year. Your goalkeeper, Kate, has been so good in PKs.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of a crapshoot, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when we were lining up for PKs, I kept telling them PKs are all about luck and confidence. And if you have that confidence, you'll be able to succeed. But I think we had some younger players have to step up and, you know, we just got a little nervous, but we know we're good in that situation, and I think that will be also another learning point that we can grow from.
Well, you converted one of the 3 goals for the Jaguars in the shootout. Do you have a certain approach in those PK situations, or does it depend on the opponent and the goalkeeper?
I would say it depends, but also I just pick my spot and I go for it, and that's what we practice multiple days a week in practice. And so I was pretty confident with my spot that I chose, and I just went for it.
Well, I know you're one of the leaders on the team, along with Avery, Katie, and Kate. And Coach mentioned that he kind of turned the locker room over to you guys late in the halftime session there. You know, so are you one of the girls that spoke up at all?
Yes, I did. I mean, I just felt like the first half we were letting them dominate. And so I think we all touched on how we need to keep our energy up and assert that dominance again and just keep possession, because I think we're a very possession-oriented team, and I don't think that we were really seeing that in the first half, which kind of tore us down.
Well, how about after the game? I mean, did you guys have any messages for your teammates? Like, hey, we just got to forget about this game and move on?
Yeah, I mean, especially the people who missed their PK kicks, I just kept going up to them that it's not their fault. I mean, we got ourselves in that situation, and it was just a huge growing point that we can't let a team, again, assert their dominance before we do, and we just need to keep our energy up and, I think, get more opportunities as a team.
Well, we talked to the coach about Avery's injury. You know, if she would happen to be out for a while, I mean, do you feel like you would need to step up and maybe even take on a bigger leadership role?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Avery is one of our leaders on our team. And so when she was out, it was pretty hard on a lot of us. But I think that we have other people on our team, too, that can step into that leadership role. And something that's our team identity that we focus on a lot is how everyone can be a leader. So I really, truly believe that even though we're all seniors who are, you know, the main leaders, I think that everyone is a leader on our team.
Well, now you guys get a chance to play Valley on Friday, and this was going to be a big game, you know, regardless, but with both teams coming off of losses, do you think that makes this game, you know, even more important now?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but Valley will always be a tough competition, so it'll always be a good game.
Well, what do you think are going to be the key matchups in this one? What do you guys need to do to get the result that you want?
I think that we need to keep our possession and not, what Alan said, be in that transition, and also just defend and, you know, don't get passed, or, you know, we just can't have, we can't lose possession, and yeah.
All right. Well, coming into the season, of course, the expectations for this team were obviously very high. You had several key pieces returning from last year's championship team, and you guys were ranked number one in the preseason. You know, what do you think you've learned about this team in the first five games?
I think, like, it's a lot of adjusting to do because we had some key players last year that we don't have anymore, but I think it's just learning how each person plays a different role on the team this year, and getting comfortable with playing each other, because we do have a lot of freshmen that are stepping up this year and people who didn't get much playing time who are playing now this year. But I think as long as we stick to our key identities and stuff, we'll always be the same team. And yeah.
Well, I imagine the rankings are going to shuffle a little bit this week. I don't know. Do you guys pay much attention to the rankings, or do you just kind of put them out of your mind?
I was actually talking about that last night. I don't like rankings because I think it messes with people's heads, and also, when you see that number one, everyone's trying to, you know, attack you, or they'll play their best because they know that you're the top-ranked team. So I don't really pay attention to that because I don't think it defines us as a team at all.
Well, I'm guessing Northwest is going to have that target on their back now. So,
yes.
Well, we talked to the coach about what a gauntlet your conference schedule is going to be this year. You know, and we said, you know, both your team and Valley suffered their first losses last night, and your crosstown rival Ankeny also lost for the first time on Monday in their shootout at Johnston. But it seems like there's a lot of several teams in your conference, you know, that could be a contender for the state title, don't you think?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think we are the best conference in the state, and so every team that we play will be good.
Well, it should be a fun season. Thanks a lot for coming tonight, Alana. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
You bet. All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients. You're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We're constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I want to thank my guests again for coming in tonight. We talked with outgoing Ankeny boys and girls swim coach Justin Crouch. I enjoyed my conversation with him. And then we had Ankeny Centennial girls soccer coach Chris Allen and senior midfielder Alana Pennington. I know it's a busy week for all of those folks. Alana was telling me off air that it's also a prom week for the kids at Centennial. So I appreciate her making the time to get over here and come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.